it started in here.
I'm not even mad. It's amazing.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Good morning and welcome to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew. I am Drew. That man over there, reunited, and it feels so good, is John Justice. And there, pushing our buttons this morning and answering your phone calls at 651-989-5855 is the lovely, talented, and radiant Sam Sansevier. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Jason Lewis on the show just after 8 o'clock today. We have Fox News' Pete Hegseth will be joining us. We'll be talking about all the frenzy.
All the frenzy. It's one, a frenzy edition.
One frenzy to another frenzy to another frenzy. I'm making a master list of all the frenzy.
There's been so many frenzies.
Yeah. I had to. And there was a. Well, there's an article that came out from one frenzy to the next out of American Greatness, Victor Davis Hanson. And he basically laid out how we keep moving from one frenzy to another. And his list isn't long enough. I've added more. There was a few items on there that I think fit into the. Because we're currently in the sexual harassment, you know, post-Harvey Weinscum revelation frenzy. So the big question mark is, you know, how quickly does that one fade and when does the next one pop up?
And it's also manufactured. You know, it's all so driven by just partisan interests. You know, I mean, there was the frenzy du jour during the Obama administration, but they didn't have mainstream media enablers.
Right.
And
right. That's
the difference.
Yeah.
Is you've got CNN and you've got MSNBC and you've got, you know, all the major networks, you know, enabling all the frenzy and treating them as if they're legitimate and real.
And don't misunderstand. It doesn't mean that the issues aren't legitimate and real. They are. But it does mean that they get whipped up into the frenzy and becoming, you know, nationwide spectacles. And we'll talk about this later on in the show, but when you have, like, the one thing that really stuck out to me when you get to the allegations of the individuals in the Minnesota State Legislature, there was, like, a letter that was penned by a bunch of pastors and parishioners and churches condemning and calling for Schoen and Cornish to step down. I'm like, why are you guys getting involved? what this isn't... You know, why? And it's because it's part of the frenzy. It's because they feel like it's necessary for them to inject themselves.
And part of the problem is, you know, one aspect of the frenzy is if you don't step out and condemn it vocally,
right,
publicly, then you're going to get accused of being complicit or at least, you know, condoning of it.
Ooh, I just had a new... I'm going to write it down.
That's part of the frenzy machine, is everybody has to get on board and condemn it, call it out, and if you don't, then you're part of the problem.
Just came up with a really good app.
Whether or not you've done anything wrong.
Came up with a really good app idea. We'll talk about that later.
Is it the sock rental one we were talking about?
No, the sock rental?
Yeah, remember what? We had the idea for a sock, like an Uber for socks?
What?
What?
Who did you have that... Oh, okay. I whoosh. That went right over my head.
I thought it was brilliant. Apparently it wasn't worth remembering. And I just gave it away on the radio. I need to patent that during the break.
I mean, Uber for socks is not a good...
Let it go.
You literally never found yourself without socks.
The socks come and pick you up and walk you somewhere?
No, they bring you socks.
Whew.
Okay, we'll talk about it during the break.
Do we have
sock fairies?
They can go get more coffee.
It's an Uber for socks.
Speaking
of... makes no sense.
Sock Uber.
Uber? What?
Speaking of frenzy, out of Fox News, last night Sean Hannity called for a ceasefire, asking his fans to quit smashing their Keurig at coffee makers after critics blasted the company for moving to pull its advertising from his show over his coverage of the sexual assault allegations against U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore. So the problem here was Media Matters, which has been trying to silence free speech for a long time now, they went after Hannity over Hannity's perceived defense of Roy Moore in interviewing him on the show. Okay, so because of that, Keurig went and stopped advertising, pulled their advertising. Now, the company Keurig has actually gone and apologized. The CEO has addressed the situation and says the company will continue to advertise on both liberal and conservative networks. Okay, so the CEO stepped up and said, hey, we shouldn't have pulled those ads in the wake of the controversy. But the bigger part of the story was apparently fans of Sean Hannity were taking their Keurig machines and then destroying them in protest.
Well, yeah.
That's not how that works.
That's a really, really dumb way to protest. you don't give the company your money, purchase the product, and then destroy it.
That's so dumb.
As a form of boycott. That's not how boycotts work.
Just don't buy more.
Okay. that's the thing. So
the point to a boycott is you're denying them your money.
Right. So basically, if the logic, if I could try to get into the logic of somebody being irrational enough to destroy their coffee maker, so the logic would be, I don't trust myself to not continue to use my Keurig machine. So because you have to keep buying
to
the
force
little
this protest
yeah, so because you okay. keep buying the little coffee packets, I will destroy my Keurig machine so that I have now forced myself to not buy any more of their coffee to go into the machine. So that,
but
which
you
is
don't have to buy the pods from Keurig. That doesn't work.
Yeah, there's like off-brand.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend...
It kind of works.
Once you buy the machine...
Slightly works.
You can end your relationship with Keurig altogether.
Yeah. Unless you're one of those individuals that has to buy like the brand that goes with
it. No, you don't.
There are people that are like that, though.
There's
maybe
you.
Maybe they're the ones that are destroying their Keurig machine. No, I don't.
Did you destroy your Keurig
machine? No, I don't have a Keurig machine.
I have a Keurig machine.
I do not have you. You should destroy
I'm
it.
I'm not going to destroy
in
it.
In solidarity.
I kind of like it.
Why do you like Roy Moore?
What?
That's the logic there, right? Leap. If you don't destroy your Keurig machine and you own one, you obviously must support Roy Moore.
No, I think you got it backwards. The people that are destroying the Keurigs are in support of Roy Moore because they're mad at Keurig for pulling their advertising over Sean Hannity's support of... this is all dumb.
Yeah,
it's all
much.
Really dumb. I'm keeping my Keurig.
Yeah, let's go back to your Uber sock idea.
It's brilliant.
Suddenly that now sounds relevant. Sam, please tell us that the internet's been scoured.
It has.
We'll bring you Sam's top five things you need to know coming up next.
You're listening.
Justice and Drew, along with Sam, Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter, and you can give us a call at any point throughout the show, 651-989-5855.
And this week, we are delivering Tim Hortons once again on Thursday to a lucky office to register. All you got to do is tweet at us, use the hashtag Tim Hortons TCNT. We will randomly pick one after the show today. So do it today. You got to get it in before 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we'll pick a winner and deliver some tasty Tim Hortons on Thursday.
All things go accordingly, I will be there this time.
That would be nice.
You would not have wanted me there last. No, that would not. That would have made for a not a fun trip. So just saying.
Well, not for you. Like, wouldn't have affected my enjoyment of the trip.
Oh, I was in a bad way.
I was trying to do something funny. Try and imply that you would sneeze all over the donuts.
Yes.
So thankfully you weren't there.
Thank you, Sam.
You're
there
welcome.
We go. Sorry to step on.
Yeah.
You're funny.
Yeah.
My bad.
Whatever. It's fine. I'll survive.
Sam has been in there scouring the internet, finding the top five stories you need to know about. Let's get right into Sam's top five for a Tuesday.
Number one.
A Senate GOP chairman, or campaign chairman, has called for Moore to be expelled if he wins.
Yeah, and that was right before he went and smashed his Keurig.
He actually bought Keurigs to smash them.
You've got the whole Keurig thing backwards, man.
I just want a smash more.
From the Hill, Senator Cory Gardner, who leads the Senate GOP campaign arm, is calling on the Senate to expel embattled Alabama GOP nominee Roy Moore if Moore wins December special election. Gardner is the first GOP senator to publicly raise the specter of expulsion. He said, "I believe the individuals speaking out against Roy Moore spoke with courage and truth, proving he is unfit to serve in the United States Senate and he should not run for office. If he refuses to withdraw and win, the Senate should vote to expel him because he does not meet the ethical and moral requirements of the United States Senate." Gardner's statement came hours after Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said he believed the women making accusations against Moore and the candidate should step aside. Under the Senate rules, a vote of two-thirds of the body can expel a senator. That would be historic. The Senate has not expelled a member since 1862.
Whoa. Well, that's something to look forward to if Roy Moore wins. I guess. I mean, he's probably still going to win. That's the weird thing about all this.
Yeah.
And, you know, because for a lot of reasons, and not the least of which is a lack of viable, you know, third party options.
Yeah.
You know, so Roy Moore's probably going to go on and win, and then he'll probably go on and get expelled.
Gardner's words go further than his initial condemnation of Moore in the immediate aftermath of the Washington Post report on Thursday when a woman named Lee Korfman claimed that Moore had a sexual encounter with her when she was 14 years old and he was 32.
Yeah, there were some further allegations, other allegations that came out yesterday. They all kind of fall under the same umbrella of being
gross,
but of being justified or not justified, being what's the word I'm looking for that I'm lost on? Not justified, but not refuted.
Yeah.
But they fall into the same category of you could say he said she said. Well, is what I'm trying to say.
The allegations do appear to have some credibility. I understand. I understand why there is skepticism. It is political. And I don't think it's unfair to be skeptical of anything that falls into this political nature, in this close to an election. You know, the politics gets very dirty, and both parties will do a lot of underhanded, dirty things to try to gain a seat, retain a seat, gain power, keep power, whatever. But the number of accusations and the fact that, you know, there have been now reports of, you know, again, the everybody knew kind of line when it comes to Roy Moore, when everybody knew that he was like this and nobody said anything. There does appear to be a degree of credibility to these, and it is very troubling.
But that degree of credibility, and this is not looking, and I don't know. I don't know on this, you know. You just, and that's the problem. Nobody does know. Nobody knows really what happened. It was a long time ago, but the problem is it is the political part of it. And so for every time somebody comes out with some type of claim, there is another entity out there that is there to refute it. So getting back to the original, is he going to win? Is he not going to win? To what you were saying, I agree. He probably is going to win because for those that support him, there's enough presented to go and strip away the credibility of the claims as they continue to come out. There hasn't been like a smoking gun yet to go and say, yes, he did this.
And all it takes to strip the credibility away in the eyes of a Roy Moore supporter in Alabama is the fact that this is coming from the mainstream media. I mean, that's all they need. You know, the perception is... It doesn't surprise me that there's so much skepticism. It doesn't surprise me that that the Roy Moore is probably going to go on and win because, you know, the mainstream media has been so dismissive and derisive towards conservatives in general, Southern conservatives specifically, Alabama conservatives. I mean, they've been the butt of a million jokes. So when a report comes from the Washington Post, yeah, it doesn't surprise me one bit that there's a large swath of people that are like, I don't believe that.
Well, and take it a step further. We talked about the opening of the show where we've been moving from frenzy to frenzy to frenzy. I mean, even step further back, and just look at the year that we've had as a whole and look at all of the allegations and the different issues that we've been dealing with across the board. I mean, all that plays into the minds of individuals in this. When you look at all of the allegations, some legit, some not legit, when it goes against Trump, you know, everybody's just really skeptical right now, and they're very quick to go and draw their lines and pick a side. And in this case, so far, they're more than likely going to pick the side of Roy Moore.
I will say this, though. If Roy Moore had a credible defense ready to go, first of all, he should have deployed it already. And second of all, I don't think that so many fellow GOP would be jumping ship and abandoning him. I mean, Mitch McConnell wants to keep that seat. Jeff Flake wants to keep that seat. Ted Cruz wants to keep that seat. You know, all these prominent senators, they surely want to keep that seat. They don't have that big a majority in the Senate. They need every seat that they can get. And for them to, I'm sure they've had conversations with Roy Moore. I'm sure they've had conversations with Roy Moore's staff. And for them to now be walking away and disavowing it tells me that they probably know more than we know about this.
Yeah, and I'm even skeptical on that front. I'm even skeptical that they just don't want to take the heat either. And I'm not picking a side on either of this right now. I'm not there. I'm not going to vote for this guy. He's going to have to deal with this regardless. But I'm even skeptical whether or not they are moving against Moore because they know of anything credible, or they just don't want to be taking the heat either.
Number two.
Speaking of Roy Moore, a new woman has accused him of sexual misconduct when she was a minor. From the Washington Post, an Alabama woman on Monday accused Roy Moore, the Republican nominee for Alabama's open U.S. Senate seat, of sexually assaulting her and bruising her neck in the late 1970s when she was 16 years old. This new allegation is following the allegation that we were just discussing, an extensive report that was published on Thursday by the Washington Post that detailed allegations that Moore had initiated a sexual encounter with a 14-year-old girl when he was 32. The story had also described his relationship with three other girls who were between the ages of 16 and 18 at the time, and Moore has so far denied the allegations.
Yeah, and again, I mean, these allegations, to me, all appear to have enough credibility that I could not support. I could not throw my vote if I were in Alabama, or my support,
sure,
you know, outside of Alabama, behind this guy. It's just it's all really gross. And his defenses and his denials have been far less than convincing.
Number three,
Trump Jr. messaged with WikiLeaks during and after the campaign. From Channel 5, the documents released by Trump Jr. show him responding three times, at one point agreeing to ask around about a political action committee WikiLeaks had mentioned. He also asked the site about a rumor about an upcoming leak. The messages began in September 2016 and ran through July. Trump Jr. downplayed the exchanges as he released them. He tweeted, "Here's the entire chain of messages with @WikiLeaks, with my whopping three responses, which one of the congressional committees has chosen to selectively leak." How ironic.
Yeah, this is not much. I mean, there was a bunch of hay being made about this yesterday, and it was like WikiLeaks messaged him, and he would respond, "Oh, okay."
Well, you found like this piece from The Atlantic, and it was like 8 pages long. I was like, "Are you kidding me?" Yeah, duh. Of course, he's going to be talking with, you know, WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. I'm not so shocked by that. They messaged him first. Yeah.
It's not like he was reaching out to them begging for information. They were sending him messages going, "Hey, you should look into this. You should look into that." And he was like, "Okay, I'll pass it along." it was more just a polite response than anything else.
The direct messages had been turned over to congressional committees investigating Russian intervention in the 2016 election and if there were any links to Trump's campaign. In a statement, Trump Jr.'s lawyer said thousands of documents had been turned over to the committees. His lawyer said, "Putting aside the question as to why or by whom such documents provided to Congress under promises of confidentiality have been selectively leaked, we can say with confidence that we have no concerns about these documents, and any questions raised about them have been easily answered in the appropriate forum."
Yeah, well, you know, you say Julian Assange, and then people think Russia. Even though he's not Russia, they just kind of go, "Julian is it's not. That's just a WikiLeaks guy.
Just a dude."
Number four.
Justices are going to rule on Minnesota voting place ban on political attire. from the Associated Press, the Supreme Court has agreed to determine whether a Minnesota statute that prohibits wearing political attire in polling places is unconstitutional. The Supreme Court said on Monday that it's going to take a case challenging the law. Several groups sued just before the 2010 election to ensure officials would not bar them from wearing Tea Party apparel to the polls, including buttons that read, "Please ID me." They referred to legislation that would have required voters to show identification at the polls. Minnesota voters in 2012 rejected a state constitutional amendment that would have required voters to show photo identification before voting. Lower courts upheld Minnesota's law barring political apparel at voting places, saying it's reasonable and applies equally to all political material regardless of viewpoint.
I don't understand this law. I mean, I kind of get the intent behind it, but does anybody really think that by the time you're in line at a polling place, that somebody wearing something is going to make you reconsider how you were already planning to vote?
I am with you 100% on that argument. Okay, absolutely. That is super dumb. Right? He's like, oh, you know, I was going to vote for Trump, but I saw that really snazzy Bernie shirt.
She's with her. she's pretty reasonable, and she's with her, so maybe I should change my vote.
The only logic that I could potentially apply to having this be legitimate is if you need a starting point to keep the political talk from happening. So if you ban the attire, then that means that kind of everything is banned, and you already have the. You already have the distance you have to keep,
right,
when you go to a polling place. And so with that, just to maintain consistency, then I can kind of understand that this is your standard. If you can't do things politically here, then once you cross over the invisible line, then, you know, all of the politics kind of stop apart from you going in and casting your vote. So from that level, I can kind of see the justification.
And it's not like the Supreme Court's going to rule on whether or not it's a dumb law or not. It's going to rule on the constitutionality of it. And you're right. If it's applied equally and it is within, if it is reasonable, then I don't think it's going to be found to be unconstitutional. It's just dumb. It's a really dumb law.
Look, we're just going to be voting via app in the next, you know, 20 years anyhow. So.
I saw people get turned away for Make America Great Again hats.
Right.
When I was in line to vote in the last election. And some people, you know, had to cover up their shirts. I mean, it's who's going to be influenced at that point?
I like when they have to turn them inside out, but you can still see what it is. Turn it inside out, but you can still tell that I'm with her.
Send somebody to jail over a hat. Come on.
Number 5.
Metro Transit drivers have voted down a contract and authorized a strike during the Super Bowl. From the Pioneer Press.
It is really funny.
Drew's giggle. Oh my gosh.
This is going to be fun.
From the Pioneer Press, unionized Metro Transit bus drivers and light rail operators have rejected the Metropolitan Council's most recent contract proposal.
Oh.
members of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1005.
Catchy.
Right.
Voted down the 3-year proposal overwhelmingly, with 93% opposing it. The vote, which took place on Sunday and Monday, also authorized a strike during the Super Bowl if the contract dispute is not settled by January.
Met Council must be really confused by this. They're not used to having their decisions questioned or put up to a vote of any kind. They kind of just rule with an iron fist of whatever they want to do.
Among members' primary concerns is their safety on the job, which was not adequately addressed in the Met Council's latest proposal. The union president Mark Lawson, he said, "This is really not all about money. A lot of this has to do with working conditions. We have drivers that are routinely assaulted on the job." But Lawson said he is optimistic that the two sides will reach an agreement before Super Bowl festivities begin. He said, "We have time to get this hammered out. That's what we're hopeful for." Metropolitan Council spokeswoman Kate Brickman echoed Lawson's sentiment. She said, "We value the work of ATU members and their contribution to our region. We are currently negotiating in good faith through a mediator and are confident we will reach an agreement satisfactory to both parties." ATU represents about 2,500 bus drivers, train operators, and support staffers. Metro Transit last saw a strike in 2004. That walkout in March and April lasted 44 days. No criminal charges had been filed in the case as of Monday.
Well, the good news is, if they do go on strike, right, Okay. If they do go on strike, then while they're on strike, they can certainly go and reroute, right? They can consolidate. They can look at the routes and the lines to which, you know, aren't being used nearly as much. And they can trim down and they can, you know, maybe lean. You can cut back on staffing, right? And they can pare down if they actually go on. Make a good positive thing out of it. Yeah,
that's nice.
That would never
happen. That's cute.
That would never happen. It's just me and my little utopian fantasy world. Lyft and Uber got to be happy, though. Yeah, right. Go on strike.
Yeah, sure.
Please,
why not?
By all means.
Yeah,
I'll buy a bigger car.
Right. We'll take care of all of this.
Unbelievable.
Stellar job, Samantha.
Thank you.
These stories will all be up on the Justice and Drew show page a little bit later on this morning.
Coming up, I'm very excited about this. Got a couple of different stories. One, out of the city pages we'll dive into. Downtown Minneapolis Dayton's project called out for almost all white artist renderings.
Almost.
Almost.
Not quite.
Not quite.
Okay,
but I've got issues.
They were still, it was still too white.
Yeah, I got issues with the individual that made the observations because they actually ended up being racist themselves. Well, I'll tell you how coming up. Also, out of Tampa, Florida, this is an interesting one, a transracial man.
Saw this coming.
Born white, but feels, you know, like he's Filipino.
So... He just, might as well. That's how he identifies.
I'm feeling a little Filipino.
Keep those tweets coming in. Use the hashtag TCNT and hashtag Tim Hortons TCNT if you want to be entered into the drawing for us to deliver you some tasty Tim Hortons treats on Friday. And the phone number you want to take part at any time is 651-989-5855.
Justice.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130, 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew, along with Sam, 651-989-5855. During Sam's top five, we were talking about ruling over the political attire at polling places. I'm with you, by the way. I don't think anybody's views are being swayed by somebody's hat, T-shirt, or button.
I can't imagine so.
But as a set standard to make sure that no politics are taking place, you know, I suppose I get it.
If you're going to have a set standard and you're going to be consistent that there can be no political messaging in and around a polling place, then I guess the consistency argument makes some sense. And again, the Supreme Court's not going to rule on it whether or not it's dumb or not. Let's go to Robert in Shoreview. Go ahead.
Good morning, boys and girls.
Hey, Robert.
Good.
I work armed security, and during the last election, I was posted out there at Hastings for early votes. And one of the biggest reasons that we weren't allowing shirts with political statements on it was mainly to keep people from getting into arguments standing in line. I mean, there's nothing worse than trying to
pick up
the office of a
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
That makes sense. I was thinking, thanks for the call, Robert. It was, if we didn't have that rule, I remember when we went to the Republican National Convention, and specifically, obviously it's there at the convention itself, but I remember being at the airport and then knowing the individuals who were also going to the convention because of how extravagant they were all dressed. You know, they had the big hats and the buttons and the, you know, they didn't have that rule. I can only imagine what the lengths that some people would go to express their pleasure with whomever they're going to be voting for.
Or displeasure.
Or displeasure.
Someone else who someone else might be voting for.
True story.
Yeah.
Out of Tampa, Florida, USA Today today, riding in a flamboyant purple vehicle. Now, the name is J-A-D-U. It's split up. Would you go Yadu or would you go Jadu?
I like Yadu.
Yadu. Okay. So
Yadu
shows up at a coffee shop to open up about his new identity. Yadu, born a white male named Adam, now considers himself to be Filipino.
Okay.
Turns out the purple ride.
Can you do that?
He has. The purple ride he drives around in is also called a tuk-tuk. An Asian-derived vehicle used for public transportation in the Philippines, he says.
Okay.
Yadu is part of a small but growing community of people who considers themselves transracial, referring to someone who was born one race but yet identifies with another.
That's not...
Hey, man.
It is.
Okay.
Free for all, man.
You can do what you want now.
Yadu.
I mean, look, if you're going to make the argument that you can do this with gender...
Yep.
then I don't understand why you can't do it with race.
Yep.
The two arguments seem to be contradictory. If you're going to say that a person born of a certain race can't decide and identify that they are a different race, then I don't understand the difference between how you would look at this between race and gender any differently.
Not to mention the fact that a lot of people do it once a year on St. Patrick's Day.
Or on May 5th.
That as well. And now, sounds weird, not to them. Yadu says he grew up enjoying Filipino food, events, and overall culture, saying, whenever I'm around the music, around the food, I feel like I'm in my own skin. I'd watch the History Channel sometimes for hours, you know, whenever it came to that, and, you know, nothing else intrigued me more but things about Filipino culture. I would argue, just for the sake of argument, that... maybe he just likes the culture a lot.
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't necessarily need to grab onto the identity of it.
Here's probably why he feels compelled to.
Okay.
Because of the cultural appropriation argument that so many like to make. You know, it's no longer considered acceptable to appreciate and value and love a particular culture so much that you immerse yourself in it. And if you're not from that culture, you know, you start dressing that way, you start enjoying their music or arts or cinema or foods or whatever, somebody's going to come along and accuse you of culturally appropriating that for your own benefit, for your own gain. And that's now considered wrong. So this is sort of the way around that.
Right.
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 No, I'm not culturally appropriating. I truly, genuinely identify as a member of this culture. So I'm allowed to do these things now.
Well, it definitely, it begins to fall into that line of thinking where your attempts to be diverse end up doing nothing but divide. And this speaks to exactly what you were saying. You know, it's not enough to just be happy in your own skin. It's not enough to just be happy with who you are. But now you've got this problem where if you try to go and admire something else, if you try to be something, if you change your look, you're right. The cultural appropriation part of it, well, there's a whole part of the conversation and individuals out there that want to say, no, you can't do that. That's wrong. So in which case, okay, well, I'll just go ahead and identify myself as being Filipino. Dr. Stacy Schnecker says, as a licensed psychologist and with a BA at Washington University plus an MA, doctorate from Florida State, she hasn't had a client who wanted to change their race, but has worked with many clients wanting to change their body in some way. If someone feels like they feel at home with a certain religion, a certain race, a certain culture, I think that's who they really feel safe, who they feel like inside about finding out who you are. The more knowledge you have of yourself, the happier you can be. And as long as you're not hurting anybody else, right? I don't see a problem with that.
That's kind of where I always fall on these things.
If Yadu wants to...
Do what you want, man.
Yeah.
I don't care. It doesn't affect me one bit.
He hasn't told his family yet because he believes that they will laugh at the notion of changing his ethnicity. Says if
he hasn't told his family yet?
Nope.
They probably know now.
True story, right? Yeah. Now... Apparently, this doctor says they works with individuals like this a lot. In 15 years, worked with a lot of transgender people. And that brings up another major change for Yadu. He is also transsexual and is considering changing his gender as well. He has spoken to his mom and family about that.
He was really born in the wrong body, wasn't he?
Apparently.
Country, body, everything.
Apparently. Now, if he tried to, would it be racist of him if he tried to physically change his appearance to look like he was Filipino?
I mean, I don't know anymore. Probably. Maybe. I don't know. Everything's racist nowadays. And it shows you, like, the value of victimhood. I mean, that's where a lot of the pushback on this idea of being transracial comes from.
Right.
Is you haven't earned your victimhood. You know, there's a victimhood assigned, you know, a sense of entitlement, not entitlement, but a sense of, you know, you have to treat me a certain way because I'm this race and this race has been oppressed and this race has systemic problems and there's systemic racism against our people. So, you know, I can make demands upon you and I can demand certain accommodations. And if you haven't earned that victimhood, well, they do not want you in that club.
Now, you mentioned, right, not hurting anybody, okay? There is another potential problem here, though. If more people were to decide to go transracial, your race can make you more marketable and in some cases eligible for certain benefits, jobs, and scholarships.
That's true.
A quick Google search for ethnic scholarships. They found the Filipino scholarship was the second option that popped up. Many might question Yadu's intentions or say that he's the perfect case of cultural appropriation. He knows this can be a problem, but he says he's not trying to take advantage of anything. Okay, that's fine and dandy, but what if somebody did, right?
Oh, sure.
What if somebody did and somebody said, well, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to go ahead and identify as whatever.
I'm going to check this box.
Check this box.
Right. There's a friend of mine who is a, you know, your average basic white girl, right? But she's got a very ethnic, foreign sounding name. Sounds like it comes from a very specific region. And she told me the same thing. She got a lot of phone calls and responses to her initial college applications, encouraging her to apply for certain scholarships simply based on her name alone. Like, they hadn't seen a picture of her. They'd never met her, anything like that. And then she would tell them, well, I don't really qualify for that scholarship. And then all of a sudden, they'd be like, you know, she couldn't get a call back. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, see, that raises the question I was going to bring up, is that if you are transracial, and we'll just use Yadu as the example.
Yadu.
So let's say that Yadu marks on his application that he is indeed Filipino, but then he goes in for the job interview, okay, mm-hmm. and they say, let's say he goes the full route. He says he's Filipino and he's a woman, right. But he hasn't transitioned yet. And he's got all the necessary requirements for the job, mm-hmm. but what if the employer, who, through, you know, look, would be like, well, you're kind of not telling the truth here.
The employer uses their eyes.
Right. And then doesn't hire them based off of that. Is he now susceptible to discrimination charges?
Maybe. I don't know anymore. I have no idea anymore. Sam and Blaine, good morning.
Hi. Just kind of a quick thing here. This gender, whatever they're calling it now, or not gender, but
transracial
identification. Yeah, this has been going on for quite some time. I'm a black man myself. I don't know if that means anything, but white guys in the inner city have been trying to act black. There's a term for it. I don't know if I can say it on the radio.
I think I know what term you're referring to.
But they've been doing this since the 90s or even the 80s. It's kind of funny that now people want to say that this is a thing when this has been going on for quite some time. And it's not just the white guy doing it. There's blacks, there's Asian. You know, I work in a pretty large business downtown, and I see these type of people come in, and I just shake my head. You know, so it's, you can do whatever you want, but it's been going on for a lot longer than this one story.
Yeah.
Well, especially when you look at, say, the music community and the rap community and the hip-hop community. I mean, you could make the same type of argument, but you're not labeling it then. You could say, well, it's cultural appropriation. You know, you can say it's just a style choice, mm-hmm. you know, in that regard. But he's right. It has been going on for a long, long time. This is just an attempt to go and make a name for it.
I always chose to look at it as, you know, kind of an homage.
Like, sure.
Appreciation.
Right.
You know, I always got frustrated when groups would start getting upset at pop artists or whatever if they put out a video or a song that sort of, you know, referenced another culture and they'd accuse them of cultural appropriation, say they shouldn't do that. It's like, why can't you just look at it as like a tribute?
Right.
Like, I appreciate this culture and I appreciate the aesthetics of it, or I appreciate the sound of this music and I want to be a part of it. I want to engage in this.
And normally you in those, and certainly in those circumstances, the public can go and decide how serious or not serious they're going to take that in that individual. You kind of go, hey, man, you be you, and then I'll decide if I'm going to buy your records.
Dave Santiago, good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I got two things for you. Number one, how do you explain Keith Richards being labeled by the Rastafarian Jamaicans as an albino Jamaican? Okay, that's number one. And the second thing is, some years back, there was a young guy from South Africa who born and raised and finished up his high school in America. He applied for a scholarship for African Americans. Mm-hmm. On all his paperwork, everything says he's from South Africa. He is from Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. Applied for a scholarship, got it. then they came out and said, we can't give you the scholarship. You're white. He said, no, you said it was for people from African Americans. I'm an African American. No, you're not. You're white.
But I'm legitimately from Africa. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I've heard similar stories, and it just it shows you just how ridiculous these identity politics games can get. And
I need a better word. Can I identify as trans financial? Hmm. But I'm like much richer.
You identify as
a rich, maybe trans 1%,
like a 1%er.
Trans 1%er.
That's called debt. That's called going into debt.
No, I don't want to be a debt.
Yes, living beyond your means.
I want to be rich. So I want to identify as a rich person. So trans 1%er, trans, you know.
Yeah, we'll look into that.
Trans financial.
Yeah. Maybe we're a couple years away from that being accepted.
I'm going to work on that a bit. All right.
651-989-5855 is the phone number.
Coming up, downtown Minneapolis, Dayton's project is being called out for in the city pages, well, covered in the city pages, for an almost all-white artist rendering?
Almost.
Plus, coming soon, an anti-Trump hotel. Would you stay in it?
Broadcasting on AM 1130.